For those of you who don't know him, Sir John Spencer is a polymath. His is the story of rags to riches, a businessman of terrifying acumen, but also something of a celebrity. This special report features recordings from his speeches around the world, his interviews, his infomercials, as well as secret footage only just released this week, which puts his career in a slightly more disturbing light. This is Sir John Spencer, keynote speaker.
If you could just do a level for us, Mr. Spencer.
Sir John Spencer. No, that's cool. Would you want a level? One, two, buckle my shoe. Is that all right, yeah? Well, it's been a struggle. I've worked hard to get where I am today, and England isn't an easy country to get ahead in as an entrepreneur, and I am an entrepreneur.
So I'm joined in the studio today with Sir John Spencer, entrepreneur, potential mayoral candidate.
Hello, everybody.
So you're quite a rising star in the business world. Mm. I mean, a sir.
Thank you.
So young.
Mm. But it's been hard work, as I'm here to tell you today.
So how did you get to be where you are? How did you become Sir John?
Well, it's been a struggle. I've worked hard to get where I am today. And England isn't an easy country to get ahead in as an entrepreneur. You know what I mean?
And you'd call yourself?
I am an entrepreneur. See, I mean, I talk about this in the book, but which you can buy for $11.99. I saw a gap in the market, and I dashed in to fill it, and it wasn't easy. Now, when I say it's been a struggle, I mean just that. I nearly didn't make it. I nearly caved at some of those early hurdles. Now, this wasn't some smash-and-grab operation. It was a planned commercial enterprise. I spent time setting myself up, getting all my ducks in a row. To succeed, I had to make sacrifices, and, well, some of the changes I had to make, they stuck. You wouldn't think I'm a Muslim, would you? Well, I am, in many ways, sort of. But it wasn't a conversion of conviction, yeah? It was something I did for the most mercenary reasons, not that I think anyone's complaining. Out of my success, I gave over a very substantial percentage of my hard earned cash to charity, and I still do. That's one of the changes in my life that I stuck with. That pillar stuck. I live well, so I give back. I didn't always live like this. I grew up on a dead end estate, grew up in front of the computer, PlayStation, and all that. We had no money, never had no money, and yet I always had the latest games, console, TV, clothes, videos, DVDs, but we never had any money, you get me? Priorities totally backwards. Now, of course, I've got all the money in the world, and I won't let a computer in the house, except for work. My children will play in a proper garden, now that I can afford one, and they'll climb trees and read books. I came late to reading myself. Found I had a reading age of 5 when I first started the Institute course. I should have died for shame, but I was kind of proud of my ignorance, even as I tried to dump it. But for all that, I was an enterprising child amidst the squalor. How did I start? Badly. But that ain't an excuse for failure. My mum was an alcoholic. My dad was AWOL. I lived in a shithole. And now I'm here. I am a man, and I made my own self. That's the lesson.
So you think of yourself as a teacher?
Well, no, look, I'm telling you this, and, well, everyone at home, I'm telling you this, really, because I want this, I want me, to be an inspiration to you. I'm a life lesson, yeah. You can change your life. You can make a difference. All right, you do need an education, but you can't rely on schools to feed you. You have to be hungry to hunt for life lessons, for chances.
So how did your career start?
Started my career following in my father's footsteps. He came back into my life when I was 10, and I thought he was so cool. He was strong, athletic, and never, ever worked. He was also thick, but I didn't know that at the time. But there was this schizoid quality to him that I just didn't understand, or didn't until I was old enough to copy it. You see, he was strong, yet he was always joking about his bad chest. He was athletic, but his doctors claimed he'd never run again. He played football with me, but he always snapped a foot brace on afterwards. He was always coming into our house on crutches and a neck brace, or with at least one arm in a sling. But once inside the house, then they were gone. Like that. You see, I didn't know what a benefit cheat was. Not then. I was too young to understand. Every time he saw me, he would have a little moment, yeah? A little heart to heart. Son, he'd say, son, you love your daddy, don't you? And I'd get all shy and say, like, yeah. And then he'd say, you won't mention to anyone about playing football with your old man, will you? And I'd say, is that because you're a benefit chaser? And he'd smile, knowing I got it just a little bit wrong. Yes, my son, it's because I'm a benefit chaser and it's our little secret. No, I thought benefit chasing was some kind of sport. And I suppose it was a kind of sport to Dad, you know what I mean? Like, he played his best injuries in court, he performed well against the judges, but no good striker, he wasn't up to much in defence.
Yeah. So was he ever caught?
Soon after his visits, he'd get caught out. Well, yeah, he was always getting caught out. But look, he introduced me to the trade, as it were. And it weren't long before I was trying it myself, actually, just on a low level, you know, at school. All right. Yes, miss. I can't do games, miss. My leg, you see. Now, I never had a note, but no one argues with a foot brace, do they? So I got to sit at the side, snug and warm, watching the girls go past, you know what I mean? Giving them my best smile.
So when you left school, did you get a good education?
I left school with okay grades, yeah. I moved on, did a few dead-end jobs, but I knew I had enough smarts to know that I was going nowhere fast. Call centres, manual work, office jobs, moving stuff. See, that's what most people do. That's what most companies do. They move stuff from here to here. Paper, bricks, food, stuff. And I wasn't earning anything. It wasn't enough to do anything, yeah? I had plans, a real business plan, but no capital. I had no real credit history. Banks wouldn't touch me. And I didn't want to run a startup on credit cards. I mean, I'm not a muck. So I studied, I caught up, enrolled in a few courses at the Institute with the little money I had set aside. I knew I needed better smarts, but even with a new education, even with the action plan, with retail experience, I still couldn't get enough capital to start up. And it was then that the solution just fell into my lap. I mean, literally, it was in the paper. Like, I was reading what I thought was just another dull bit of politics. There was this bill going through Parliament to give the police the power to hold you for 42 days without charging you or anything. Do you remember it?
Yeah, it was during the latter years of the Labour government.
Yeah,
Gordon Brown.
That's it. That's the one, right? Fucking stupid idea, wasn't it? Sorry about that. Stupid idea. I mean, I nearly turned the page, but I'm glad I didn't, because actually what I read next changed my life. See, the only way the government... you'll probably remember this. The only way the government could get this bill through was to offer compensation for any wrongful imprisonment of anyone held for them extra uncharged days. The maximum compensation being about 40-odd grand. Whoa, I thought. Well, that would be a pretty good starting point for any business and would be enough to prize a matching loan from a bank. And then my brain went into overdrive. All I had to do was make myself into a plausible terrorist suspect, a dangerous enough man to be put away without charge for 42 days. But not enough to get an actual conviction. So started working on a new action plan. I figured I had to convert, infiltrate an extremist group like on the periphery, create ambiguous evidence streams, and take a holiday in Pakistan. So I prepared the budget, I did a bit of careful research and the risk assessment. I had a 40-page plan written out longhand. With all this data before me, I felt it was time to make the final decision, do it or not. So I took the file out into the communal area in front of my mum's house. I was still stuck living with her at the time. and I looked around at the rusting signs, the burning waste bins, the dirty plastic furniture, the shopping trolley and the random sofas. So kicking a path through the foot-high grass, shrouded by four-foot-high weeds, of course, I made my decision. I got on my lighter and I burnt my plan. Well, couldn't leave any evidence lying around to prove that I wasn't serious. If I was doing this, I was going all the way, so I walked away from my home straight to the nearest mosque to convert, which wasn't exactly difficult. I mean, you'd think there'd be some sort of selection process, yeah? But perhaps they made it easier after all the terrorists popped up, you know what I mean? I mean, I'd have thought they'd have to do something to account for all that bad publicity. Anyway, I learned how to be a Muslim. I went to a nice mosque, all very moderate and welcoming. Didn't mean the regulars accepted me with open arms. It was welcoming, but, you know, let's wait and see before we can be trusted to help out with a social evening. It took time, but I planned for that, and acceptance at the mosque was far quicker than at home. Raised a lot of eyebrows around the estate, and I really hadn't planned for that.
Was there any violence?
Yeah, Dad was well abusive with me. Oh, Mum cried a lot. Yeah, it's almost like I come out or something, do you know what I mean? Made me wish I was gay, actually. Much easier for my parents to deal with. See, I couldn't tell them what I was up to, see? Do you understand? Yeah. Like, I was playing the part from the start, you know, the serious, the over-vehement convert. And Mum hated that. Like, really hated it. Especially after she'd had a few. Can I just take a minute?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm cool.
Did anything happen there?
Oh, yeah, so she threw me out there and then. And you know what? I lived in a bedsit for the next fucking year. I had few possessions, but what I had was part of the strategy. And that isolation played into the part. The proper Muslims saw I was alone. It helped for them to accept me. And for me to edge towards the periphery of the groups, you know, the younger, more militant talkers. But it was always a disappointment. I mean, you wouldn't believe it, yeah? A mosque that size, not one fucking terrorist. I was so frustrated. I felt I wasn't getting anywhere, but you did a talk about people with more extreme views, you know, of a group that met in such and such, of someone who preached in this area. You heard about it. You heard all sorts, even if it was being condemned by the older men, you still heard. Eventually, I fell in with a group of young lads who had the right vibe, the anger, do you know what I mean? They had the anger. And once they accepted me, I found I was invited to just hang around, join them at their flats for these unplanned meetings. I was all geared up for my first. I mean, this was it, I was in, and well, it was nothing. They were just talking shops, you know, talk about the West, problem of the West, nothing concrete. I thought it was because I was still an outsider. Nah. They were just getting together and ranting at each other. Then I remembered not to be so disappointed by this. I didn't want more. I didn't want to actually become a terrorist, just to look like one. So I had my rant in the group. I had my moment of righteousness and just got back to my plan. Started filling up notebook after notebook with doodles. Things that might look like something, you know, dangerous. Sketches of ground plans of buildings, routes across London, giant cocks. No, I just hadn't been getting any, yeah? Good Muslim girls who go to mosque do not go all the way. Well, not if you want to keep your cover story intact. Anyway, with this non-evidence left around, it was time for stage two, which was go on holiday. Yeah, it was a nice holiday. Pakistan's hardly Tenerife, but, you know what I mean, it was nice to get away and I got a good tan. Took a drive into the border regions, kept off the official radar. Now, I was out of contact with the world for a while. I mean, it isn't easy to pick up much news in the Pakistani wilderness, though I did meet up with some very nice drug smugglers. They were looking for a mule, but ain't no donkey me, thanks but no thanks, and being another backward country, still no chance to get a fucking shag. Though I did meet up with some very nice drug smugglers. they were looking for a mule, but A, ain't no donkey me, thanks, but no thanks. And being another backward country, still no chance to get a shag. Anyway, on the plane back, what do I find? The fucking House of Lords has thrown out the bill. Some thoughtless bastard had decided it was a breach of civil liberties. Selfish twat.
You were quite upset by
that. Oh man, I could have killed someone. I mean, look, I nearly hit the stewardess. She was awfully nice about it, don't get me wrong. I mean, I bought her a drink to apologise. Well, actually, I married her in the end.
Really?
Yeah, well, that's another story. Yeah.
So you're flying back?
Elizabeth, just want to say I'll be home soon, yeah? Anyway, we spent an age in customs, passport checks took forever. Though when I got back to the bedsit, I thought nothing of the delay. It was Heathrow. I mean, it wasn't till the next day, actually, when the police come knocking, that delay seemed more deliberate in action.
In fact, I have a tweet here from Samantha, who's asking you about your arrest. Did you think the police used too much force?
Well, hello, Samantha, first of all. The policeman who knocked on my front door at 4 a.m. with the battering ram were actually very polite. See, I offered no resistance and they were good enough not to use overt force as they forced me to the ground with the butts of their assault rifles. As they cautioned me, all I could say was bollocks. I really didn't know what to do about the whole mess. I mean, I could just tell them that I wasn't a terrorist, but I was fairly sure most people do that in this situation and no one was going to believe the truth. I mean, would you? It was a comfort that I knew they had nothing real on me, so all I could do was hope they'd see their mistake and let me go. Now, remember, the police can be quite good at what they do. Like any institution, it is composed of a mixture of peoples with a wide range of abilities and skill sets. Something you must remember if you ever run your own business. However good your HR, human resources, department is, you'll always carry some little work-shy shits that you just can't sack. You're never quite gonna get the staff that you want. However, that don't mean that there aren't some very skilled and experienced coppers out there, and luckily, one of them was put in to question me. I realised that this woman was going to see through me pretty bloody quickly. Even if I didn't plead my innocence, she could see it in my eyes. She knew this is just some fuckwit who couldn't hurt a fly. Unluckily, whilst she wanted shot at me, the person above her was a misogynist bastard and didn't listen to a word she said. Now, I employ people on an equal opportunities basis and do not tolerate discrimination of age, class, sex, or race. I only discriminate against lazy, arrogant bastards. Anyway, whatever the politics of it was, and there was some politicking going on, I wasn't going anywhere. I was gonna go the full 28-day distance, which is a long time. It's a month. Another unfucked month.
And so what was the daily routine of
that? Oh, man, that meant constant trips to court, transfers from this prison cell to that, daily cold showers. No, they weren't trying to torture me, they were just shit.
Right.
Towards the end of the 28 days, like, the gloves were off, though, you know, it was proper get the bastard to confess.
Cool. What sort of questions did they ask?
So, like, who are your contacts? What is this route on the map? What do the giant cocks mean? Oh, yeah, they were faltering by now. Do you know what I mean? They were giving up. The bastards were going to have to let me go, basically. I mean, surely I was thinking, now they've got to let me go. So, actually, I asked, can I go home now? Then there was a long silence, and then I did get the answer. Yeah. Yeah, it's begrudging. That's what it was, actually. No warmth.
So, and when they said you could go, what did you do?
Oh, I danced for joy. Result! Though they soon had me on the floor, giving me a few subtle kicks. Well, look, I didn't actually grudge them for that, because it was my fault for not having my lawyer present that day.
So they let you go?
Yeah, they let me go. That's right. Like, 28 days in Chokey, and not an extra penny to my name. So, even though there was no real claim to be made, on principle I started proceedings for compensation regardless. I hired the best lawyer I could, not the human rights bleeding heart liberal I'd had in the cell, but a proper lawyer, you know, a bastard. to sue their own office. The MI5, the MI6, Her Majesty the Queen if I could get away with it. But remember this, planning is all very well, but sometimes you need to think outside of the box. This law action, it was all fine, but it wasn't going to get me far. There were richer pickings. You see, the tabloids had had a field day on the story. Whilst I was inside, they'd called me all sorts of shit. I was hated across the land. They'd taken my name, they'd rubbed it in dog dirt, and then shout on it.
So what did you do?
So out went a massive writ for defamation of character, which was supported financially by my friends at the mosque.
Really?
Yeah. Well, look, I only knew these guys in passing. They were older than my usual set. But I tell you, they were the business. They were calm, they were organised, and they were quite efficient. Well, we sued 4 newspapers, and 3 of them settled with us out of court, by which time I was quite a celebrity, and I was able to set up a considerably larger company than I first planned.
Hang on. I mean, how did you really make your money?
Yeah, let me just chop this up.
So seriously, how did you make your money?
Well, I mean, seriously. Just give me a second, hang on. Oh, yeah, well, look, I was cash rich and I was ready to invest. And
that
was a situation that nicely coincided with the collapse of the economy, you remember?
The credit crunch
was a great time to have cash. Like, no, seriously, all in businesses, like, desperate for money.
Yeah.
You know, like, share prices were crashing, I was spiking, there's no end of headless chickens. Listen, I was pretty able to build up a pretty impressive business portfolio, you know, for a fraction of what I could have got over a month previously. And with the companies I bought outright, it was simple asset stripping. Simple. You know what that means? That means, like, take over, cut the workforce and sell on. I'm here fucking kidding. Of course, I didn't drop my new religion as I'd originally planned. Those guys were good to me and it would have been rude. And I had to stay in their good books while I sat on my lawyer for any pennies we could extract from the crown. which wasn't much in the end, but I got an apology. In fact, my reputation couldn't be better. I dropped the suit against the 4th newspaper after I had lunch with the proprietor, who suggested that after they had serialised my book, I might write some pieces for their business section. No hard feelings there. I have a semi-regular column with them to this day. From there, it wasn't much of a leap to television, getting my own series and becoming, well, a bit of a celebrity. I know. But at least I'm a celebrity who does something. It's all part of my business. My life story is my business, and I cut, dice, and mash it up for maximum profit. So, here I am. A success?
Has it taken a toll?
Yeah, it's not all rosy. I mean, I fought a few other battles. Like, well, I've had some problems with the police since, and the guys at the mosque don't approve of my new lifestyle. They were pretty miffed about a new wife, actually, and that
she's not a Muslim.
Yeah, we didn't have the wedding at the mosque. I mean, I bet quite a few of them had hoped to do a bit of matchmaking, you know. But for God's sake, man, I'll give them money. What more do they want? Besides, they make it harder to make up with Mum and Dad.
How is your relationship with Mum and Dad?
We're not quite there. I mean, look, I give them money too, but, well, success is hard, you know. It's hard on you, on your family. You've got to scramble for every bit of it just to hold on to it. And I worked hard for what I got, no matter what anyone says. Spent days in them cells, remember? Only 28, I mean, you know, not 42, but that was still hard work.
And do you think that that time away changed you?
Funny thing, that. Look, I spent some time with radical elements. That doesn't mean I did anything. I listened to some pretty extreme stuff, like hot air mostly, but there are a lot of very angry people out there, man, and it was easy to, on the low days, in the bed sit, you know, family gone and all you got is the work and the religion, and the only people you talk to are a bit narked, well, it was easy to see how, attractive it was. There is something wrong with this world, isn't there? And it's easy to live that black and white solution. Strap a device to your chest, walk into a crowded shopping centre, watch a group of single mothers, bored teenagers wander past, and then release the trigger. And then nothing, no me, just a dull thud. But then I remembered. Then I remembered what it was that kept me from this nightmare. Money. There was always the money, because it's a beautiful thing. When I was lost out there, it was the only thing that kept me sane, the goal. And I was lucky. There are lots of young, impressionable boys and girls out there who don't have this dream to hold on to. They aren't given the chance to dream of making their fortune. They aren't supposed to want to be a speculator, an executive director, a footballer, a footballer's wife, a hedge fund manager, a model, a glamour model, a celebrity in this glamorous world of smoke and mirrors. They don't have that. They don't worship the power of money. They worship God. And there ain't much return on that investment, folks, believe me. And, well, that's the lesson, ladies and gentlemen. The way ahead is business. It is the core of my success. Spiritual matters, yeah. But don't forget the bottom line. The bottom line. How far would you go for your beliefs, and how far will you go for money? I know. Right, any questions? Do you know what then? Can I get a Courvoisier with some orange juice, please?
I think we've got tea.
Yeah, nah. No, that's cool. All right, look, I've got to run anyway, yeah? I've got a meeting with Donald Trump. Is that cool?